going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting and special edition of the Chicago Bullseye Saturday morning edition after the epic victory over the Charlotte Hornets. So we have Keith from Bull Scripted on. Really great to have you on again, Keith. And I'd love to start off with your impressions of last night's epic victory.
definitely a breakout game for Chris Dunn. Anybody who follows me on Twitter knows that I've been hyping his potential, not as an all-star level player, but as a great defender who can be a playmaker. Obviously, I don't expect him to drop 22 points and shoot 63% from the field every night, but if Dunn could even be a 15-5-5 with two steals a night like he's averaging for us, that's starter-level potential, and that would be icing on the cake.
No doubt. He has been. I mean, last night was probably the best game of his career, no doubt about it. And that's in contrast to a game earlier this week where he went 1-for-11. Against Oklahoma City, just a real disappointing game. I'm at the same spot with you on him. Like, I feel he has got elite defensive tools, and he has the ability to be first team All NBA defense. That's how good he could be. Offensively, I think he takes the ball to the hoop in great fashion. I think he's got that skill, but his jump shot is so still, messed up to me. I think he goes too low. I think he has a little bit too much bend in his knee when he shoots, and that leads to a lot of off the back of the rim. But I do feel like, that's something that can improve, right? If you get with the right coach, you can become a better shooter. Do you think this guy has all-star ability eventually, maybe to make an all-star team?
See, I'm kind of at the same spot I was with Butler year two that I am with Dunn. I compare them in a lot of the ways. They're very similar players, four-year college players, defensive prowess, not supposed to be the greatest shooters, but they're hard workers. And Dunn plays with the similar kind of energy that Butler did early in his career. Obviously, he has more skills that he has to craft at the point guard spot. So I've always kind of been at the point where I don't think, with all the elite point guards that are in the league, that Dunn is necessarily an all-star guard. But I also can't say that he isn't, because he does have that potential, and he does seem to have that grit that Butler has, that he's going to improve every year. So I can't write it off, but I also can't guarantee it.
You know, how do you feel about, I feel that Valentine and Dunn in the backcourt is an excellent backcourt. I feel right now this year that should be the starting backcourt. I think that Valentine does have the ability to play the point on the offensive side of the ball. He handles the ball fantastic. He's an excellent passer. I think he's a good facilitator. And Dunn can play off the ball. But on the other side, Dunn can handle all the tough point guard assignments, or whoever the harder backcourt guard is. And Valentine will take the lesser of the two. What do you think about my thought? Am I nuts, or do you feel a little bit more Valentine love too?
Oh, no. I've been saying Valentine should start. I did say Blakeney should start yesterday, but I've been saying Valentine should start. I think a lot of his horrible shots that people complain and cry about are because he's on this second unit. He feels that he should be a starter, and there's really no offense on that unit. Him and Dunn being there on the second unit, really they're the only scoring options, and Dunn should never be your first or your second scoring option. You need to fill Dunn out with shooters. Valentine is most definitely a shooter. So if the question is, should Dunn and Valentine start over Grant and Zipser, I think that's a full-blown no-brainer, yes.
Or what about, do you feel that right now, as currently constituted, this is the question I'm trying to get at, is when Levine comes back, what do you feel the optimal starting lineup will be, assuming everyone's healthy?
Assuming everyone's healthy? I mean, I'd like to go Dunn, Levine, Nwaba, Markkanen, Rolo.
Amen.
I've already dubbed Nwaba and Dunn as the Bash Brothers because they get after it. I was quoted on here saying that I felt that they were too redundant of players to have on the floor at the same time, and I was completely wrong. They're suffocating. You can't, nobody can breathe. I think we had one of the best defensive ratings in the league with that lineup on the floor when Nwaba was healthy. And nobody plays defense anymore.
Agree 100%. Only caveat I'd say is I'd still love to find a way to get Valentine in there, and maybe Valentine, maybe at some point, you know, now that in reality in basketball, the positions, this defined positions are really kind of disappearing. What you're trying to find are guys that could seamlessly move from position to position, especially on the defensive end. And I think it is possible that you could start Valentine, Levine, and Dunn and at, you know, from point guard to small forward, and all three of those guys could actually kind of switch positions almost seamlessly between those three. You can also add Nwaba in there. I understand Fred would probably want Valentine leading the unit off the bench, but that's the only one out of what you said there is that I would potentially switch on.
No, yeah, I mean, I could see that happening depending on the nightly matchups. Obviously nice where you got a big small forward like LeBron James on the other side, or a Kawhi Leonard or a Durant. You know, you're not really going to be able to get away with that. You can't have somebody 6'5", who's not really great on defense guarding them, especially because those teams generally have more than one player from 1 to 3 that you have to look out for. You know, the nights where we can get away with that, where Dunn can guard the three because he is a physical defender and can apply the pressure and get the ball out of their hands. That's the kind of situation I could see that working. So I think that would be kind of a situational lineup.
What do you feel about Blakeney? Obviously tore it up for Windy City, 44 points. I was at the game the next night where he didn't play. He'd been called up to the Bulls, to the team by then, but I'm kind of excited with the opportunity this kid's going to get to kind of run that second team, which I think he could potentially do. Big picture, I don't see him as a starter, but potentially as a player off the bench, it could be a decent piece. What's your take on his game?
I kind of see him as a younger Justin Holiday with more potential, actually. I think what the Bulls need to do is they should probably drop Felder's non-guaranteed deal, wave Pondexter, pick up Kuzminskis for Pondexter's spot, upgrade Blakeney to a full-term deal because these 45 days are going to run up quick if he stays in the rotation like he's supposed to, and then we should upgrade Diamond Stone to a two-way deal. With the way Felicio's been playing and the way Diamond Stone has been playing in the G League, I think getting a two-way contract tag on him so he can't be poached by other teams that are in a desperate situation like us would be a wise thing to do, so we don't have another Spencer Dinwiddie thing going on here.
Yeah.
But I think Blakeney is, like you said, he's going to be a great off-the-bench guy. He can get his own shot. He's 20 years old. He's as athletic as all hell. He's a solid defender. Moves his feet well. He has active hands. Obviously, he's a little undersized at 6'4 for a shooting guard. And obviously, that's why Dunn and him on the second unit work so well, because Dunn allows for you to play a undersized shooting guard and still be effective on the defensive end.
You know, I was a little shocked that Covington signed with the Sixers. I didn't see that coming with the expenses that they're going to have to outlay pretty soon for some of their younger players. But they did it. Congrats to the Sixers. And he was a guy I really wanted to see the Bulls go after in free agency with their cap space.
Last year, the few Philadelphia games that I watched, he was definitely, besides Saric having his few games there last year, he was definitely somebody that stood out. And this year, he looks even better. He's got such a quick release on that three, and he's a great defender. But I think Philadelphia is looking at it as, okay, we paid Embiid, we paid Covington. Really, the only person that matters that we have to pay next is going to be Simmons. So I think they're all right, because Redick's deal is going to drop off. He's only a one-year deal, and that's $22 million cap that's going to free up there. So,
yeah, I do love Covington. It did hurt me to see that he is, because he was one guy I felt like you just drop him on the Bulls, and they're going to have immediately 10 more wins. But, so obviously he's off the market. Avery Bradley's another name I like. Are there any other potential free agents or restricted free agents that you've seen that you would like to see the Bulls go after hard with their immense amount of cap space next free agency season?
Honestly, man, I'm I'm clinging on to that whole dang Ingram thing. I know it's the longest shot in the world, but the free agents that are out there next year aren't really all that great. They either aren't going to want to come, don't necessarily fit our timeline, or they're a risk, like Jabari Parker. Obviously, he showed great potential in the league, you know, was potential MVP candidate, I mean, not MVP, Rookie of the Year candidate in his rookie class when he came out, but he's just had a plethora of injuries. So we'll have to see how the season all plays out to see if he's a target that would be worth going after. But essentially, I think we're going to have to try to take on somebody's cap and get a future prospect or an asset that way. Mm-hmm. Deng and Ingram's contracts both expire the same year. So Deng's making 18 mil. Ingram's going to make over 7 mil next year. So that's $25 million in cap that the Lakers need. And they really have no other way to get rid of it. Because if they have the offseason they're going to have, their first-round picks become garbage for the future. Clarkson, his contract's a little eh for the player. Yes, he's a great player, but he's not we can dump Deng for this kind of thing on there. And they've already said that they're not re-signing Randall. So he becomes even less of a valuable trade asset at that point.
Yeah, that's the other name I was going to bring up. I did not hear that. They said they're not re-signing Randall.
Yes, Magic Johnson told Adrian Wojnarowski that they do not intend to re-sign Randall. Whether that is a strategic thing, you know, whether not playing him so much and they're saying they're not re-signing him so he doesn't get big deals and they can get him for cheap and try to retain some of their cap, that could be the play at hand. But yes, it was reported by Woj, I think it was 2 or 3 games ago.
That's
that
amazing.
They do not intend to pick Randall back up.
Yeah, so wouldn't take then Deng. I didn't hear that, but you know, I feel Brandon Ingram. The more I watch him, the more intrigued I am by him. He's just got incredible talent, and you just see it there. And once he gets stronger, if he gets stronger, that kid could be special. And you know, so that's I agree with you 100%. I would hold out and take Deng and Ingram, you know, for whatever we need to make that happen, Lopez or whoever. But would you take Randall and Deng?
I would not. I do not think ruining our cap for Deng, as much as I love Deng as a bull and as cool as it would be to have him back in Chicago to potentially retire as our veteran and help build our culture, that's a great storyline, but not, you know, giving up that much cap space until 2020 for somebody like Randall, who you're going to have to re-sign. Obviously, Ingram's only so appealing because he's still on a rookie deal. Obviously, it's a higher-end rookie deal because he was number two pick. But that's what's more intriguing about Ingram is, you know, he's got 2 years after this year left on his deal that you control with team options. And really, all he has to do is bulk up, because that's the only scary thing about watching him is every time he falls or he hits somebody, you think he's going to break in half.
Yeah. I think he's clearly bigger this year, though. I think he has put on weight. You know, obviously not enough, but he definitely, to me, looks stronger than he was last year. Let's get into a little bit of the top five picks for next year, because this seems to be the focus for everyone when the college basketball season has started. And I think this gives an opportunity for some of the people who Bullseye listeners who, you know, aren't aware of who are going to go top five or who are the likely top five, for you to check out some of these guys playing right now. So let's start out with Michael Porter, and you're an expert in this draft. You've done a lot of research on it. Let's start out, I guess, with this one. Out of these five, which one do you prefer the most? Michael Porter, DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Luka Doncic, or Mohamed Bamba? Out of those five, who do you like the best?
For the Bulls, my ideal fit would be DeAndre Ayton. Dream draft would be landing the lottery pick, letting everybody else drool over Michael Porter and Bagley, try to trade back to the 3 spot, get Ayton and acquire some future assets, maybe a destined lottery team's 2019 pick, so we don't have to consider tanking, whether it's a top 5 pick or a 14 pick, still in the lottery. I think with Rolo's contract expiring next year, Embiid's ascension here in the East, if he stays healthy, you're going to have to go through Embiid in the future. And Ayton poses the potential of an Embiid. He's 7'1", with a 43.5-inch vertical at 250 pounds. He can shoot the three. He's a good free throw shooter. He's pulling dream shakes on kids in college. And the announcers claim that he's playing at about 40% right now. We might not even see 100% Ayton until March. The commentator also said yesterday that if Ben Simmons wasn't a rookie this year, Lauri Markkanen would likely be rookie of the year. And Ayton is so good that he has already almost forgotten about Markkanen.
Hmm. Wow. So you're
that's,
yeah, you think he'd be a fit? He obviously can play center, so him and Markkanen at center power forward could. It's exciting.
Oh, yes. I think Ayton steps right into a role that Rolo does. He makes rebounding easier for Lowry. He can guard the perimeter. He runs the floor like a damn gazelle, and he's just huge. He is the definition of an elite athlete, and I have heard some questions about Porter's athleticism, and he's only played 2 college minutes so far, so I haven't seen much from him to where I can say, hey, we really need to get Michael Porter, because at this point, I've still only seen the All-American game and him dunking on high school kids. So that doesn't do enough for me. I would still take Doncic over Porter at this point. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Doncic really fits our roster if Dunn works out.
Interesting. So I love the idea. The thing that sticks out to me about Ayton is he's listed at 260. He's somewhere between 250 and 260, where Porter's at 215 and Bagley's at 225 and Doncic's at 220 and Bamba's at 220. I mean, that's 30 pounds of primarily muscle that he's bigger. It's just a whole nother level, you know what I mean, of size that I agree with you completely. And somebody, I can't remember, was him or Bamba, whose wingspan was just insane. Maybe I think it was Bamba's actually, but...
Yeah, I think Bamba has close to like a 8. I forget what it is, but he has a ridiculous standing reach.
Yeah.
So
you gave us a little 411 on Porter, and it sounds like, yeah, obviously we haven't seen enough of him, but you're not as high on him. How about Marvin Bagley? What's your take on him?
Obviously there's been a lot to like. He plays on a team that is completely filled out. He's got a great point guard to give him the ball. He's got somebody to stretch the floor in Allen. Obviously, I like what I see, but his free throw shooting hasn't been so great. His long to mid-range game hasn't been that great. He's got a great post game, and he's solid on defense, but he's not spectacular, and neither is Ayton. The thing with Ayton is, you know, most athletic big guys like him are more polished on the defensive end than they are the offensive end. It's the opposite for him. He's very, very good on the offensive end, where he probably only needs a little polish and a little guidance there, where the defensive end is where he needs the coaching and the understanding more. Offensive, he's already good. And my big thing this year, I want somebody who can play defense. We need an athlete. I think the only way we're going to counter teams that score 150 points a game is to be good defensively, but still efficient enough offensively.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to beat Golden State Warriors or the Rockets at their own game. You have to find a counter. You have to start playing defense again. That's the only way that anything is ever going to change in this league, is if somebody breaks this mold of copycat and goes the opposite direction.
Yeah, or goes the direction of the Pelicans. I still feel like a team like that with massive size could give Golden State a big problem. And that's where I think the Bulls and the Sixers are kind of moving towards, hopefully, is really athletic, extremely large players that you can throw the ball. I know the post game is gone now, but I do feel like you're seeing it with Embiid. He's incredible.
Oh, no, it's gone when you don't have a 7-footer who can do the dream shake. That's when it's gone.
Exactly, right.
When you got that. And they can shoot outside. Ayton was 1-for-4 the other night from long range. But he has a very solid jump shot. Like, it looks pretty. Like, you look at Ayton, and you look like you're watching a late 80s, mid-90s, you know, big man like Hakeem. And you get excited. And I'm trying not to get too sucked into it, because when Levine gets back, we we might play ourselves out of the top five.
If we do play ourselves out of the top five and we get Miles Bridges, I'm fine with it. I think that guy, you talk about a defensive ability. I saw it in the Duke game. The guy is incredibly athletic. He can be a rim protector at 6'7". The guy's insane athlete. He on the offensive end, he wasn't assertive enough, and I think there's ways to get around that, but he's got tools to be an elite defender. So if you want to go in that direction, as long there's a couple of guys in this draft I really like, even outside the top five. This draft is just so loaded. It's unbelievable.
Oh, no. I've been on Kevin Knox, who's one of the youngest prospects in this draft. I don't know how he fell back to 15 after the game against Michigan State. His big thing is he can't shoot threes. But he looks like somebody that's in the middle of Kevin Durant and Giannis Antetokounmpo in his athleticism. He's 6'9", extremely long, needs to fill out, probably still growing as he was 17 going into the year. And he only needs a shot. So
yeah,
he's somebody that I'm keeping an eye on outside of, you know, the top five as well.
How about Doncic? Because I have heard a lot of NBA people I've respected really just, I mean, and his numbers he's putting up in Europe are insane for 19, and they are far better than anyone has put up at that age. So I don't, you know, I really don't. There's
oh,
Ricky
no,
Don, Rubio.
At this point in time, Doncic is still my number one prospect. I just don't think he fits the Bulls. I don't think he can play small forward in the NBA, even though he's 6'7", 6'8". I think he's going to play a James Harden-like role, you know, where he's great on offense, isn't the fastest, but his hesitation moves keep people off balance and allows him to create for himself and others. But defensively, I just don't see it, and I don't know that Dunn can compensate for both LaVine and Doncic. You know, Dunn, LaVine, Doncic, 1-3, sounds great. You know, LaVine played point guard for Minnesota before. That's 1-3, all with great, you know, potential playmaking for their teammates, but I don't think defensively that works. And the article I wrote the week after the draft and the trade for LaVine, I hadn't really taken a liking to LaVine yet, and I said, you know, the only way I would want to go after Doncic is if we didn't re-sign LaVine. You know, take the cheaper, less injury-prone, maybe more potential option with Doncic and keep the cap down. So that's kind of where I'm at. I really like Doncic. You cannot deny the kid's skill level and his experience level. And to have anybody else above him at this point in the college season doesn't make sense. He's been playing in the EuroLeague for 3 years now, and he's been practicing with the team since he was 13. His skill level, dedication, everything about him is most definitely elite. The only thing is his athleticism. And I don't think he can play the one or the three in the NBA with the freak athletes that we have here.
Yeah, it's an interesting call. It really is, because I kind of – so your biggest issue is defensively with LaVine and him in the backcourt. It's just not going to work. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
And you know, that's a good point. Unless you can really have a stopper at the three who can also guard, you know, I guess you. But your point is basically just LaVine and him together are just not going to make it defensively.
No, exactly. They're a bit even too with redundant. Dunn countering. They're similar players. Yeah. They're scorers. You know, I think.
But that's what frustrates me. Hold on, real quick though, about LaVine is he's got all the tools to be a defensive player. I mean, just an incredible defensive player. All you need is tools and want to. I don't understand why he hasn't, you know, fulfilled that yet. Do you agree with that?
Oh no, there's no doubt. He's a lengthy 6'5", 6'6", shooting guard. I don't have his wingspan stats on me, but he's obviously got elite athleticism. There's stuff the kid does with the basketball in that dunk contest, and even in live games, that just makes you go, "That's you can't do that. That's not supposed to be done." So there's no doubt, and it could come down to maybe he's been so focused on refining his offensive game after being drafted behind Wiggins, and you know, having that chip that's been his main focus. In a star role, maybe he'll step up to it. Obviously, we'll get to see that here in a couple weeks, and for the rest of the year, hopefully. So I think, you know, come draft time, we'll have a better idea of with maybe Doncic could fit. But theoretically, for me right now, I see Ayton as a much better fit. I think it helps the development of Markkanen as well. Because if we do move Rolo, it is going to hurt Lowry's development, because Rolo does make things easy for him on and off the floor. But we need another draft pick. If we get zero more draft picks by the time the deadline's up, I'm done. I'm done.
Nah. Even with all that cap space, I think with some really nice signings, of some really smart select signings,
Who do you have on that list? I mean, I'm sure you've looked through it. Who are your targets?
Well, like Avery
you
said, Bradley Covington to
just
me,
went out the window.
Avery Bradley to me, look what he's done for Detroit. I mean, he's the exact kind of guy you need. A guy who's almost interchangeable. He can guard multiple positions. And
he want to come here though? That's the other thing.
Detroit doesn't have enough room to pay him a max deal. There's no way they can with the contracts they have signed already. So, yeah, that's a great question. You know, can you do that? I don't know. But
you know, that's where I'm at. I feel, you know, we haven't pulled greatest free agents, and now we're rebuilding. It's going to be even harder to pull. You know, Butler's in that inner circle of people. I'm sure everybody knows the full story of how dirty they did him and telling everybody that he wasn't being traded. I mean, but that's part of the business. Like I had somebody tell me the other day that he's had people tell him that Holiday and Rolo will not be traded at all this year, that they're off the market. And I was like, yeah, man, that's what they say. If you say somebody's on the trading block, their value immediately goes down.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody calls you and goes, hey, you know, we really like this guy, we're willing to, you know, give you future assets for him, we know that's what you're looking for, they're going to take it. There's no reason not to. Holiday and Rolo are both only under contract through next year. So that really isn't that great of a thing to give up for picks.
Yeah. Great stuff, Keith. Hey, I got to hit the ground running here, but as usual, man, way to bring it. Great stuff. And I can't wait to be touching base with you throughout the year on the progress of the top prospects in this draft. I think you're going to be our go-to guy along with basketball historian Tim Gallagher to really, you know, share with the Bulls fans what you feel is going to be, you know, the difference makers going forward, because this is such a big era for us. I really do feel like if we make the right pick in this next draft, I think the Bulls could be back in the playoffs as early as next year and win a title in 2020. But it all
I was joking earlier. I said we draft Ayton. Call me crazy, but I can already see Embiid and Ayton going at it in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2020.
I agree. It's not crazy at all, especially if LaVine comes back healthy and Dunn continues to progress.
If LaVine comes back how I think he is, and Dunn can be a 15-5-5-2 guy every game, we are in a golden position, because Lowry's only going to get better.
Hey, you know what's so funny is all the hand-wringing and all the hatred spewed last June about that trade. And, you know, the Bulls got fleeced. They got screwed. And I would make that trade. Looking at it right now, are you kidding me? I'd make that trade 100 times. You know,
No, there is no doubt. You know, Jimmy Butler looks more like Luol Deng in Minnesota being the third option. And that's not a knock at Jimmy. That's a good thing. Luol Deng was a very consistent player and reliable in his heyday, but he wasn't a star guy. We traded high, and because of Jimmy's situation in Chicago, his value was definitely inflated. So, a million times over, I would do the trade. Everybody's biggest stickler is that 16th pick, and I can agree there, because if we had the 16th and we didn't sell our 38th, we could have traded up for Donovan Mitchell like Utah did. But, you know, that's all hindsight now. It's in the past. We got three good prospects for Jimmy Butler, and all we have to do is just be bad enough to get in the top five of this draft and pick properly, and we are set for the next decade.
Amen, my friend. Hey, enjoy your weekend, and looking forward to hearing. I'll get this posted tonight, and looking forward to having you on again soon, brother. Have a good one, my man. Keep up the good, the God's work on Twitter. You're one of the only people. Every time I read one of your tweets, I'm like, yep, I'm nodding my head. This guy is not insane. He's I could totally see where he's coming at, even when I disagree with you, brother. Have a good one, my man.
Sounds good, buddy.
Take it
do
easy.
It again soon.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. Really special episode today, as we have the great Grant Goodstein back on the Bullseye to talk, to give us, shed some light on the advanced analytics that I've argued with many of you on Twitter that is just a little bit beyond me, a little bit too old-fashioned here. And also we have the basketball historian Tim Gallagher. Guys, it's an honor to have both of you on. Really looking forward to starting out quickly today with I guess, Grant, please share with us your story. This is very timely since I've been in a heated Twitter argument about Sam Hinkie. And a lot of talk about Sam with the Sixers finally bursting out and beating a Lakers team and getting all the way up to 8-6 on the season. Oh my gosh, they're going all the way. So I'd love to hear, share with us your opinion on Sam Hinkie, number one, and tell us the story how you recently met with him for the Bullseye listeners. This is great stuff.
Sure. First, thanks for having me back. It's always great to be on the Bullseye podcast, and excited to chat with you today. For those of you who haven't had a chance to hear my previous appearances, I was a four-year student manager and analytics guru for the University of Michigan men's basketball team. So that's kind of my entry point to the world of basketball. And still, I have since moved on to the tech industry, but very much still basketball is a huge part of my life. But actually, about a little over a year ago, Sam Hinkie joined Twitter. I'm real active on Twitter, and he's a guy who I think is very smart and underappreciated. I know many Bulls fans would love to see him come in and run the team, but I actually just reached out to him on a whim with a Twitter direct message and said, "Hey, Sam, basketball junkie. Also, he's living in Palo Alto, and I'm living in San Francisco." So said, "Would love to drive down, buy you a beer, get a chance to pick your brain a little bit. And, what do you know about?" About 24 hours later, I got a message. "Sounds great. How does this day work for you?" And a couple weeks later, we were sitting having a drink at the Old Pro in Palo Alto. So that was pretty cool to get a chance to pick his brain. And the timing was pretty funny there. It was actually the night that we met was the night at this point he had been relieved of his duties as the president of basketball operations for the 76ers, and he's known as an analytics guru. And maybe the biggest risk he made was drafting an injured Joel Embiid. And this was actually the night of Joel Embiid's first preseason NBA game. So Sports Center's on at the sports bar in the background. We're kind of hanging out, talking, and all of a sudden he goes, "Well, hold on one second, Grant, hold on. I got to see this." And they had flashed the highlights of Embiid in his first NBA game in the preseason last season. And he was just beaming like a proud father. He had a couple of pretty nice plays, and Sam was very excited to see it. And I thought it was cool. Obviously, things in Sacramento, in Philadelphia, ended in a little bit of acrimonious terms there. But it was awesome to see that he truly cares for those guys. And I think he's going to be right back in the NBA sooner rather than later, running a team. I think it'd be a mistake for a team not to give him another chance.
So what did you guys talk about, if you don't mind sharing with us? How did the conversation go?
Yeah, sure. I had questions for him as to what he thinks, where he thinks the league is going and where teams can really get competitive advantages now. In a lot of ways, the NBA is a pretty copycat league. When you see the Spurs and Warriors having success with analytics, other teams start to use it. He's a guy that's gone kind of in a slightly different path and very much has a different background than most GMs in the league. And as someone myself who has NBA general manager aspirations, it was just really interesting to chat with him about his path and learn a little bit more. And I find that oftentimes the smartest people want to listen more than they actually want to speak themselves. And I was just kind of shocked how much he wanted to learn about me and learn about I work in tech. He had a lot of questions and has a big interest in the tech world. So it was a really fascinating conversation. We were there for a little over an hour, and it was just a great opportunity to have a chance to catch up with a guy who had held such a prominent position in the league.
Yeah, so I'm not a big, in all fairness, I'm not a big Sam Hinkie guy. I will say, I don't think it takes a ton of talent to tank for 4 or 5 years and tell everyone this is going to be a process and luck into the number one overall pick when it's a consensus that Ben Simmons is going to be number one. Make the case for why I'm wrong.
Yeah, firstly, it may not take, I think he would tell you that it doesn't necessarily take a lot of talent to do either, but what it does take is a lot of guts. Not a lot of teams have the stomach to do that, and it puts your job as a GM. A lot of GMs aren't necessarily acting in the best interest of their team at all times. They're really acting in the best interest of keeping their own job. So, firstly, it clearly panned out that it wound up costing him his job, and things weren't moving quickly enough, even though the owners were supposedly bought into that system. There's a lot of pressure from the league and from other external forces that kind of seemingly caused his departure from Philadelphia. But I definitely think that combination of patience and really that the vaunted process, as well as clearly Ben Simmons appears so far this season to be a can't miss kind of talent. But the real, and he was the number one pick, so again, they use kind of a consensus number one there, but clearly the big risk that he took that has shown early huge dividends is the Embiid pick. Knowing that he had a significant injury history, that he was unlikely to play for the first year, and who knows still if he will be able to sustained health, and stay on the court over the course of an 82-game season. But so far what we see from him last year, and of course, especially as we speak, he had one of the all-time great performances from a big man last night against the Lakers. I mean, that's an absolute home run, and he has the potential to be a real generational player. So I think that's what kind of sets him apart maybe from other GMs and why I think he absolutely deserves a second chance to run a team.
Yeah, I would counter, you know, he picked Jamal Okafor ahead of Porzingis in a time when it was pretty clear that Okafor was going the way of the dodo bird. You know, a guy couldn't hit free throws, back to the basket big man, couldn't hit outside of 10 feet. I remember that year very well because there were people, in fairness to Sam, there were people who were saying, actually arguing that Okafor might have been the number one pick ahead of Towns, which I thought was absolutely ludicrous. And by the end of the year in the tournament, it was clear Towns was a consensus number one. But if you're going to sell your team and your organization on, you know, just tanking and getting those top picks, you cannot miss on Porzingis instead of Okafor, especially when the whole league is going towards that model of a big man. I'd also counter that when he drafted Noel at number 6, CJ McCollum shortly after that, and Giannis in that same, the Greek Freak in that same draft. You know, if you're those two drafts, you can't miss like that. You just can't. And you know, he did. You're right. Every GM has those misses. But for all these Bulls fans that are clamoring, and I'm arguing with online every day about, you know, oh, we got to fire Pax and hire Sam. Pax's last 3 top 10 picks are Markkanen, who I think most of us would all agree looks like a home run. Jakeem Noah at 9, another home run. And you know, Derrick Rose, won MVP and whose career was cut short by injury. You know, I completely agree with you about Embiid. He's absolutely phenomenal player. But there's a lot of questions about his durability, and there's a lot of questions about where he's going to finish up. And he, you know, let's wait and see before we start, you know, crowning the Sixers as the representative out of the East. There's so much time left, and I already see online, you know, all the stats guys saying, you know, declaring victory when they're 2 games over .500.
Yes.
Well, this is Tim, and it's not.
Go ahead, Tim.
Beating the Lakers, even though it's on the road, is nothing to throw a parade over either. I mean, the Lakers are not a playoff team and have had a lot of struggles. That's to take nothing away from Embiid. I mean, some of those moves he made, if he was just on the court in a workout by himself, my jaw would have dropped. Right. So to do that against, you know, NBA talent and the, you know, put on an Akeem Olajuwon-like performance was definitely very impressive, even though, like you said, it's early and you know, dominating the Lakers isn't like dominating, the Spurs or Golden State.
Grant?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you make some very valid points there. I think it's important to also consider not only the top of the draft, but the bottom of the draft. And clearly there's been value pickups as undrafted free agents and second rounders who are huge contributors around the league, whether that's a Draymond Green or a Isaiah Thomas are probably the most well-known today. But I think in the defense of Hinkie again, he did have some really good second-round free agent, undrafted, under-heralded guys that he picked up, like a Rashawn Holmes or a Robert Covington. I think overall he did a really nice job. And that to criticize him for some of those misses at the top, you have to give him equal credit for some of those great picks at the top as well.
You made a great argument for him, no doubt about it. I'm just not... If anyone out there, any Bulls fans out there, he wants to make the argument with me that firing Paxton and hiring Sam Hinkie is going to be the answer, I beg to differ. But I know I'm alone on an island on that thought. Let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about some advanced statistics. And I'm a little bit old fashioned that my favorite statistic is field goal percentage. That tells me all I need to know. If you're hitting over 40% from three, You can hit the three and you're my kind of player. If you're, if you're shooting less than around, 30 or 31% from three, then you're Nico Mirotic and you suck. One player I've been getting in an argument with quite a bit on Twitter is Denzel Valentine. So I asked you before the show, please help me make the case for DV, Denzel Valentine, who I feel is a very underrated player who has the ability to, I think, be at least at worst a rotation player on a good team, at best potentially an all-star. I love his ball handling, I love his vision, I love his passing, and he's proven he can hit the three. Why am I wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. So first, want to start by saying I actually have quite a bit of experience with Denzel Valentine. We are actually the same graduating class, he at Michigan State, myself at Michigan. So I saw quite a bit of Denzel Valentine during my 4 years at Michigan and have definitely followed him into the pros. And he broke my back a few times and we got him a few times as well. But absolutely a talented player whose game I love. But if you take a look at the numbers this year, they're not exactly what you'd hope to see, especially when you look at some advanced metrics, one of which is the net 48 rating, which is how the team's performing when a certain player is on the floor adjusted for a 48-minute average. And while he's on the floor, he has a net rating of minus 18.4, which is among the lowest in the league. When you take a look at the numbers when he's off the court versus on the court, the Bulls are performing significantly better when he is off the court than when he's on, particularly on the defensive end, we're seeing that. So those are definitely pretty discouraging numbers to see so far this year. The one caveat I want to be sure to make is that it's still really early in the season. We're not even a quarter of the way through here, so don't want to jump to any conclusions here, but the early returns on Denzel looking through the advanced statistics are really not so positive.
Interesting. Wow, that's a punch to the gut. Can I counter with that the two best players on the team, and I think the numbers would show this, are Markkanen and Lopez. And for whatever reason, Fred has adamantly refused to start Valentine, insert him in starting lineup, and he likes him as, quote-unquote, the leader of the second unit, which the second unit features Felicio and some of the worst basketball players in the NBA, maybe in the world. What is this? Doesn't that have an effect on your advanced statistics if you're surrounded by garbage?
It definitely can. There are some numbers like the real plus minus that do their best to adjust for that. I think basketball has a long way to go before those kinds of statistics become really, really useful. I think that they can sometimes guide you to the right conclusions, but definitely aren't perfect yet. The one thing I will say is when you take a look at the five-man units that Denzel has played with, actually the top five-man unit that he's played with three times as many minutes as the next actually has both Markkanen and Lopez on the floor. So while he isn't playing necessarily all the time with them, we have seen so far significant minutes with him on the court with the number one lineup that he's played 70 minutes with consists of Grant, Holiday, Markkanen, and Lopez, and we're seeing that that lineup is being outscored by 6 points per 100 possessions when he's on the floor, which is better than the overall team average, but still not what you'd love to see from your go-to lineup there.
Do you happen to have the numbers on what is the Bulls' best lineup so far in this year, this season?
Give me a moment to pull that up. I can definitely take a look.
That'd be great.
I think that, again, we can. It's a little early to jump to conclusions, given that I see that the number one lineup that they've used this year has only played 90 minutes, so not even a full two regulation NBA games together. So the sample size is still awfully small. But I'm seeing the best lineup so far is Grant, Nwaba, Holiday, Markkanen, and Lopez. That team is outscoring its opponents by 17 points per 100 possessions. So actually been a really successful lineup today for them.
And it actually has very little to do with Grant because he's been awful this season. I will say, yesterday he starts. Fred has the nerve to start. He starts Markkanen, Lopez, which I'm fine with. And then on the perimeter, he's got Pondexter, he's got Grant, and he's got Dunn. Pondexter and Grant are shooting 17% from three. Dunn is never going to – he's shooting under 30%. He's obviously not a three-point shooter. The first play, they go into the post to Markkanen, and he gets doubled, and he kicks out a pass to Pondexter for a wide-open three, which he bricks, and the route is on. He scores 7 points in that first quarter. I don't think we need advanced statistics to say, hey, don't we want to spread the floor in today's game? And the only guy in the team that we have that can really do that is Valentine to some extent. There's a couple other players in the team, but I don't understand what he's doing. Where does he come up with a lineup like that where he feels it's actually acceptable to have Grant and Dunn starting in the backcourt?
It's awfully difficult to put together a great offensive lineup with this current incarnation of the Bulls. I think obviously maybe Hoiberg hasn't done the most ideal job, but what they have to work with on the offensive end is rather scary. There's not a lot of shooting on the floor no matter what the lineup is, so Hoiberg definitely not in an enviable situation there, but definitely a tough road ahead for the Bulls this year given the state of their offense.
I'd like to get your opinion, and you too, Tim, on the following. So watching that game yesterday against the Thunder, you know, I think we all can agree or concur that for whatever reason in the NBA, stars get more calls. And that second quarter was a parade of call after call for Westbrook, for Paul George, Carmelo Anthony getting call after call, benefit of call. I thought Blankenship had some excellent defense and he got whistled for two fouls. And Fred looks up like he just downed, a gallon of NyQuil and warm milk. What do you feel? Or are there stats that show that some, I guess the question that I'm trying to get to is, isn't it imperative on the coach to defend his players when he feels like that he's getting kind of, jawed by the officials? And are there stats to show that maybe some coaches get the benefit of the doubt or more calls than others? Grant, let's start with you on that one.
Great. Yeah, I don't know those statistics personally. I know someone that's really pioneered the way in that regard is Mark Cuban, who always feels like his team is getting jobs in every situation. Yeah. I know he's run quite a bit of analysis and that the Mavericks have done quite a bit of that internally. Personally, I haven't seen a ton of hard data on that around the NBA. I would guess that it's out there somewhere. But I think when it comes down to that game last night against the Bulls, when you score 7 points in the first quarter, I don't care who's reffing the game. I don't care if Benny the Bull is out there as a fourth ref. I think it's going to be really, really difficult to win game.
Did you, when you were at University of Michigan, hold on, Tim, real quick, just want a quick question. When you were at the University of Michigan, did you have stats on the officials? And did you actually talk about that with the team? Hey, these guys, call a tight game, or these guys don't.
So I actually know in the college game that there's definitely some really cool research that's been done on fouls by refs by Ken Pomeroy. If you're a college basketball fan and you're not a subscriber to KenPom.com, you should absolutely be right now. Pause this podcast and go sign up. really, really great resource. And it was definitely something that was discussed before the game and at halftime. There's certain refs that we knew, like Ted Valentine, famous TV Teddy. Ted likes to let the players play. And you have to play, you have to let your play to some degree be dictated by how the ref is going to call the game. If they're going to allow you to be physical, you better take advantage of that. At the same time, if you know the ref is going to be really likely to call tiki-tac fouls on the inside, you need to be aware of that and be really conservative when you're playing in the post defensively.
Tim, what did you think of my comments on Fred and his lack of passion or his lack of sticking up for his players when, you know, I felt that they were getting the rough end of the calls?
Right. Well, I kind of concur with Grant in the situation of the game last night in particular, that because of the poor start to the game and they were really out of the game minutes into it, that coupled with Fred's style is really not one to be on the officials anyway. So my take was that he's saving it for a more competitive game or more winnable game. So, but everything you mentioned is certainly true in terms of the Bulls not having many players that have the stature to get the benefit of calls, or where the guys you mentioned on OKC, Carmelo Westbrook and Paul George, are hold about as much stature in the league as as almost anyone. Right? There may be a half dozen guys ahead of them in the whole league that have maybe earned more respect. So. That's kind of a tough one. So I think Fred's going to save it for a more significant time of the season when it may actually affect the outcome of the game somewhat. The other thing I wanted to ask Grant is, we've talked a lot about Markkanen and how good he has looked, and I've commented, Grant, about how strong I thought the Pac-12 was last year, and there's a lot of players in the league. Although we'll get to Lonzo in a minute, who's not doing so great, but. Just wanted your take on Markkanen, because he looks like Fred mentioned, the Bulls hit a home run with him. And although I was very impressed, and I thought arguably he was the player of the year in the Pac-12 last year, although it was Dylan Brooks, he's outperforming what my expectations were already. And I thought he'd be a significant contributor fairly early on.
Absolutely. I think that in our pre-draft podcast, I wasn't particularly high on Markkanen. I didn't see him as a real high-level player in the NBA, but I think absolutely Tim Gallagher is on the right side here. And that so far, I mean, we couldn't have asked for more from Markkanen as a Bulls fan. And he's bringing in much, much needed shooting, as we discussed, and a really strong start to the season for him.
He's a lot more...
Right, his performance in Summer League was decent, but then he had... some outstanding performances in the FIBA play, and I think that seemed to really springboard him to the levels we're kind of seeing this early on. And when you look at his supporting cast being relatively weak, I think it's even more impressive that he's putting up the numbers that he is.
Yeah, when you take a look at the on-off court stats for him, in the opposite of what we see with Denzel Valentine, where the team improves when he's off the court. We're seeing that the offense is significantly better for the Bulls when Markkanen's on the court. We're seeing a respectable 1 point per possession or 100 points per 100 possessions when he's on the floor versus a god-awful 89.8 points per possession when he's off the court. So it clearly makes an enormous difference when he's out there, and the Bulls are absolutely, to Fred's point earlier, going to need to find some more shooting before they can be get back to their winning ways.
Yeah, Markkanen's a lot more athletic than I expected, and what I really enjoy about him is two things. Is he's got a very high basketball IQ. It's clear when he saw the double yesterday. I pointed it out, and he threw it out to Poindexter. Pondexter, he's a lot better in the post than I expected. And when we finally get Levine back, and you can do pick and roll with him and Markkanen, I really think we're going to have something there. And I should have asked you this question in the pre-show to get ready for it, but I would like your opinion on it, even if you don't have the advanced stats. Maybe we could have that in the future. Zach LaVine, as a basketball player, what is your comments on him? And do you feel that his return is going to have a very significant impact, improve the team greatly, or do you think it's just, we're still going to be just a pretty, god-awful team? Let's start out with you.
Levine is a solid player and is someone who's shown pretty consistent strides and improvement throughout his career. Obviously, a shame to see him get injured. I think that he's definitely someone who can contribute and helps the team improve. But I think still, at the end of the day, even with Levine back, I still see the Bulls at the bottom of the barrel this season. I don't think that his addition is going to be enough to really pull them out of that Eastern Conference cellar.
Tim, what do you think?
I agree with that. And when we had our discussion on the last podcast about trading Lopez or not, and my vote was to keep Lopez, and I also mentioned that when Levine comes back, he's definitely going to help, but I don't think his addition, while it is going to improve the Bulls and make them more competitive, maybe take a little pressure off of Markkanen, I don't think it's going to catapult the Bulls into a position where getting one of the top five picks is going to be in jeopardy. So I think it'll make it more pleasant viewing for Bulls fans with Levine on the floor, not just with his athleticism and highlight real kind of plays, but also just the overall positive impact. And you know, the guard play we're seeing from the Bulls right now is so dismal. You know, anything is a step up. And Levine's, you know, as Grant said, he's steadily improved until the injury, his all-around game. When he was briefly at UCLA, and I watched him there, you know, the sample size was so small, you know, it was hard to say what was going to become of him. I was almost concerned that he wouldn't shoot it well enough to really be a rotation player in the league. So he pleasantly surprised me in terms of his development and improvement. So I think he'll help, but it's not going to change the end result of where the Bulls are going to be hovering come lottery time.
I agree. I think
really impressive.
Go ahead, Grant. Sorry to interrupt.
Sorry about that.
No, it's
really
fine.
Impressive statistic from him is a guy coming out of college who there were significant doubts about his ability to shoot the three at all. He's at this point a career 38% three-point shooter. So while he's not maybe the most lights-out guy ever, it's definitely would be a valued addition to get him back on the floor for the Bulls. It gives them another outside threat.
Yeah, it's great. And it's a great sign that maybe, you know, the kid has a really good work ethic that he's able to improve his shooting to that extent. And I think it's easy to forget, too. The Bulls, we're still missing Nwaba. We're still missing Nico. We're still missing Levine. Those are three rotation players that are out. Obviously, Holiday was out yesterday, so we were down four rotation players. I don't care if you're Golden State. I always say this. If you're missing four rotation players, you're going to really suffer. And, you know, it was almost unwatchable yesterday to see how bad they were outclassed. I think when all these guys get a little bit healthier, get back, I think the Bulls are going to be much more competitive. Still, you know, not going to be above 500, but we'll finally get some wins and be able to look at ourselves in the mirror. Hopefully not too many. Which brings us to the next topic, because this is what, you know, most Bulls fans are focused on. And, you know, I watched the Michigan State Duke game the other night with five potential lottery picks. I'd like to go with you guys over the top five picks right now, most mock drafts. Let me start out with, first of all, mentioning them, Michael Porter, who's at Missouri, DeAndre Ayton, who's at Arizona, Marvin Bagley at Duke, who had his eye poked. I didn't get to see too much of him. Luka Doncic is in Slovenia. And Bamba, Mohamed Bamba out of Texas, out of those five. Let me first start with the question, out of those five, who's your favorite, Grant? And then maybe a little 4-1-1 on each one of those players. And then we'll obviously go to you too, Tim, and get your take on those five. So, out of those five, who's your favorite?
Okay.
And then I'll run through each one, just, you know, say next. Go ahead, Grant.
All right. I think I like Bagley the best. I think he is a guy who can really contribute on both ends of the floor. I think if you're thinking about drafting a big man at the top of the draft, they clearly have to be an impact player on both ends. You have to have a guy who could be a rim protector as well as an offensive force. And we've seen his ability so far in limited playing time at Duke, but what I've seen of his time at Duke, in addition to, of course, that high school highlight reel, he can get out in transition. He actually has a rather impressive skill set on offense to go in addition to his imposing size and ability to move. So if I were drafting today with the number one pick, if I were the Bulls GM and drafting number one, that's who I would go with.
Do you think he's got enough distance? I mean, think he can shoot it from distance? Can he develop that? Or I didn't get a chance to see how well he could hit the three, if at all.
I don't think he's proved that yet, but it's definitely something I think we see more and more that that basically in the NBA, 1 through 5, the best teams have guys who can shoot at all those positions. So I definitely expect that to be an area of emphasis for him, but just because he can't do it today doesn't mean he won't be able to do it going forward.
Okay, Michael Porter.
Right. Yeah, and real quickly on Bagley, if I could intervene, and his shot's not broken. The form is there. He's a decent free throw shooter, so it's not like he's got some funky shot that the mechanics are going to need to be changed. So I think it's just a question of he's really not had to score from there up to this point of his career, but I'm confident that he can develop that.
Okay, great. Thanks. Grant, Michael Porter.
Yeah, Michael Porter's another real solid player. I think that his combination of his ability to make shots with in addition to his size is pretty rare. And when you think about the kinds of guys who lead championship-winning teams, they tend to be bigger wings who can score. So I think he's a good fit in that regard. I think he's a little bit more unproven on the defensive end, but definitely a solid player and looking forward to seeing more of him this season. And definitely will have have the opportunity to make a strong case for the number one pick.
Tim, I know you've shared your thoughts before on him. You still feel comfortable with him? Is he still your number one?
He is. I just have a certain feeling about him, and it's not a knock on the other guys, but just there's something about him. He's been injured. He had a mild injury and only played the first few minutes of their opener. I think they're playing tonight, actually. I don't know if he's playing or not, but he kind of reminds me of what we see from Durant and Antetokounmpo. So a guy with his size, but that's a playmaker, that can have the ball in his hands, that can really play almost any position on the floor. And, it's got a sweet looking shot and just has a certain sparkle to him that, that magic dust or that look in his eye that you hear Jerry West, looks for in certain guys. And I just see that in him. And again, I'm not down on the others, but Porter's definitely my guy.
DeAndre Ayton, who had a very impressive, at least one game I saw with Arizona already, a very impressive start. Grant, what's your take on him?
Another real skilled, big, athletic center. I think that he checks many of the boxes of everything that you're looking for in terms of a modern center who can really get out and move and play both ends of the floor. I think he hasn't proven quite as much on the offensive end as Bagley has. I think he's still a little bit more raw on that end, although he has shown a little bit of a jumper. But definitely another guy who looking forward to seeing a bigger sample size from him, especially against higher level competition.
Boy, have you seen the makeover on his body? He looks like he's been in the weight room and just a physical specimen. I mean, he spent some time here in San Diego. He bounced around to a couple of different high schools, prep schools, and so I've seen him in person, but not lately. And then seeing him on some of these clips now at Arizona from some of their early games, he is just totally ripped. So I know Sean Miller likes having those guys in the weight room, but it almost looked like, in a matter of months, he kind of redid his body, and he just looks like a monster out there and looks kind of capable at some of the things that you're seeing Embiid do. I see Ayton being able to present some of those same skills.
Yeah, one thing about Ayton that caught my eye is Porter is listed at 215, Bagley's listed at 225, and Ayton is listed at 260, 7 feet 260, which is obviously considerably bigger. But very impressive. I don't feel like if any team ends up with these three, I think they're all going to be happy. Luka Doncic, love to hear your take on him. A lot of people I respect in the NBA who I follow really are high in this kid. And I will admit, I often look with a wary eye at European talents, especially perimeter talents, but there's no doubt there's a lot of buzz on him. What's your take on him?
Yeah, again, as a European player, he's not a guy I've had a chance to see as much of. He's drawing a lot of praise for how he's playing in the EuroLeague this year, and he's really seemed to improve as a shooter. People definitely think highly of him, and it's always an interesting test when guys come from Europe to the NBA. It's a very different game in many ways, so definitely a lot for him still to prove.
Tim?
Yeah, I've only seen him on video, obviously. I haven't seen him in person yet, but love his energy, love how he plays, and I don't think you can go wrong with him either. I like his versatility, and it's kind of shocking that he's still a teenager, right? And although these other guys aren't much beyond that, but the fact that he's been skilled, playing in international competition, and I think seeing a guy like Markkanen, who was obviously Finland isn't maybe the hotbed of some of the European production of players in the EuroLeagues, but obviously the fundamentals and skill set he has for a big guy, you can see how that translates to today's NBA quite nicely.
Yeah, I think he's probably going to get hurt by comparisons, however irrelevant they are, to Ricky Rubio, just from where he's coming from. Europe, highly talented, skilled point guard. I think it's clear, though, that those comparisons really aren't valid when it's clear that, Rubio never had anywhere near the jump shot that, Luka does. So I think he's definitely got a much higher ceiling. Mohamed Bamba, another name that has been really, I think he's had a couple really nice start here. What's your take on him, Grant?
Yeah, Bamba's a guy I followed pretty closely through his high school recruitment as Michigan was in its final group, so that was someone that I was disappointed to see did not select Michigan, but he has a crazy long wingspan. I think he was measured at the McDonald's game as a 7'9" wingspan. So,
oh my God,
you could imagine what an impact player he could be on the defensive end. So again, a guy who's more of a project, but absolutely, as far as his physical profile, everything you're looking for from a big man.
Tim.
Yeah, he reminds me in a lot of ways like Ayton. I'd say they're both comparable. I think from what I've seen, Ayton is a little more athletic, a little stronger, but Bamba has maybe a little more length and fluidity. But they seem like similar players, and I'll have to watch them a little more closely. Ayton, obviously, at Arizona, who's going to be on a great team. Bamba at Texas, where they've kind of struggled under Shaka Smart. I thought they would be at a little higher level than they've been, but it looks like the talent he's accumulating there, especially with Bamba, is more significant. So we should see how the Longhorns look this year. The other two we didn't mention, but I still have Miles Bridges on a short list right after that, and I think Jaren Jackson from Michigan State was certainly a strong prospect before, but his performance the other night against Duke was pretty impressive. And he's a young guy, but just someone his size with as nimble as he is an impressive prospect as well.
All right, so Colin Sexton, another name that I've suddenly been watching a little bit of. Are you familiar with him, and what's your take?
Yeah, point guard.
Yes, point guard who,
yeah,
for some reason...
Yeah, point guard from Alabama.
Yeah, unfortunately chose Alabama. Yep. I don't know why. I think he was nationally recruited. What's your take on him?
Well, he's from Alabama, and with Avery Johnson coaching the Crimson Tide, I think that's a big draw, especially for a point guard, right? So someone that was a NBA championship team point guard and coached in the NBA at a high level, I think, that's where the connection was for Sexton. And so, yeah, when we started getting into point guards, that name's at the top of the list. Trayvon Duval had a nice game for Duke. And I've seen Duval play in person, actually, out here at the Torrey Pines Holiday Classic. And he is lightning quick. Mm-hmm. And actually, just watching him the other night playing for Duke, it's like, boy, I wish he was on the Bulls right now. Someone like that. You know, and you saw how he made the game a lot easier for Grayson Allen, who also is, you know, an interesting prospect as maybe a, you know, a later first round pick, someone maybe 18 to 30, you know, in that range.
Or second rounder, you know, really. Yep.
A guard that can fill it up.
No, he played fantastic with 37 points. I mean, that was a beat a team like Michigan State like that. He was the reason they won. One more name before we I can't thank you enough for your time you gave us today. One more name, Metu, out of USC, because he's out by you, and I've been hearing more of his name thrown out there. Can you share some light on this guy?
Yes, yeah, I think he's a little bit more of a raw version of what you see some with Ayton and with Bamba.
Mm-hmm.
So long, athletic. You know, I think he made a smart move by staying in school one more year to continue to develop his game. He's actually from the same high school that Russell Westbrook went to. And I actually saw him play in high school as well. In fact, they came down and played and beat our neighborhood high school in the California state playoffs. Somehow our team was, La Costa Canyon had a higher seed and Metu's team had to come down here to play, but he was dominant in that game in terms of controlling the paint defensively, but also scored on a variety of ways, including you know, little, you know, 10 to 12 foot jumpers, as well as obviously scoring and dunking around the basket. So, yeah, he's an interesting prospect as well. You know, not quite as elite and polished yet, and I'll emphasize yet, because every time I see him, he looks better, and definitely an NBA player. You know, and definitely someone that, you know, you'd want on the front lines of your team, you know, controlling the paint. And his offensive game is, you know, it's not raw, but not quite polished either. I mean, he's a pretty decent free-throw shooter, has good form on a shot. So, yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on. And USC overall is going to be a very good team to watch. They have another wing who's about 6'10", Benny Boatwright, who's a great shooter, who will play in the league. And, you know, maybe one or two other guys that might look their way onto an NBA roster. So they're a team to keep an eye on as well.
Sounds great. Tim, can't thank you enough for joining the Bullseye. Always great to have you on. Thanks for bringing Grant on today. I really enjoyed it. Although Grant shattered my dreams about having an argument for Valentine, I still hold out hope he's going to turn it around this year. And I think we've seen signs recently that he will. I thought he played very well. One of the few guys who played well in the last game against the Thunder. And he's had a really nice string of games lately. So I think those numbers will change.
Well, like you said, someone with his basketball IQ and the ability to shoot the ball, I just think, you know, he needs a little more help around him. And I think, right, just intuitively, I agree with you with a lineup with Levine and Markkanen and Lopez and Valentine out there. And I don't know who you put as your fifth guy, maybe Portis. I'd like to see how that lineup does. I think that could be a competitive group.
All right, man. Thanks again, Tim. Looking forward to having you on again early next week. Let's hope the beloved Bulls pull out a couple competitive games. Maybe not a win, but at least make it more watchable than the Thunder game. Oh, my goodness, was that awful. But hopefully, we'll get some good basketball, or at least competitive basketball, from the beloved Bulls. Look forward to talking to you soon, Tim.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Fred. You too.
Have a good one, my man. Bye-bye.